This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the U.S. Board of Regents. You can access shows live or as podcasts by going online to kuci.org. You're listening to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners of Orange County. I'm Tina Spindler. And I'm here with Katrina Kirkaby, and we are your UC Master Gardener hosts for today. Hey, Katrina, how are you?
Oh, I am doing great, Tina. How are you doing today?
I'm good, but it's hot.
Oh, it is so hot. Summer is here.
Yeah, what happened to our June gloom? It didn't last very long.
Woo!
We started out with a bang this summer with some pretty, pretty hot temperatures in June, and so I don't know about you, but I think maybe the first thing we should talk about this show is how to keep our gardens watered adequately throughout this hot summer.
I think that's great. And by the way, we're doing this month in the garden, which is July, and like what to do in the garden this month.
Oh, I was so excited to get started. I forgot to even let everyone know what we were going to talk about.
So let's talk. Here we go.
Oh, well. So the water thing, man, we were so lucky in that we had a lot of good rain this year, broke our, you know, many year drought. So that's a good thing.
And we got a lot of deep watering for our plants,
oh,
and all the
gosh. Salt
got washed out and singing
so
plants
wonderful.
This year.
So wonderful. I don't know about you, but I've had record fruit crops this year on my stone fruit trees and boysenberries. It's just been wonderful.
It has been wonderful. The plants are happy. Trees are happy.
Yeah. So what we want to do now is we want to keep them happy, and of course now we're not going to see a single drop of rain probably until late fall, and so we got to rely on our irrigation, and we need to first of all evaluate what plants we're watering, right? And hopefully we've got all of our irrigation set up by zone, and that means we're going to water plants that need a certain amount of water all on the same kind of zone. So in other words, if you've got succulents and you have roses, you don't want to water the succulents and the roses with the same amount of water. The succulents are only going to need water, you know, what, every other week maybe? And the roses, of course, are going to need water once or twice a week. So hopefully folks are familiar enough with their sprinkler systems that they can go out and look at each of their stations, take a look at what plants are on that station. For instance, if station one is your lawn, then your lawn's going to probably need the most water of anything in your garden, and you're going to set that watering time to be appropriate for your lawn. Whereas if you have some drought-tolerant plants on a slope, then you're obviously going to set that watering time to be a different length for those plants. So that's the first thing, is you want to become familiar with your sprinkler stations and know what kind of plants are in each of those sections.
You know, maybe one of the easiest way to do it is just, a lot of us have our sprinklers go on in the middle of the night or real early in the morning, is just to go out, turn on your sprinklers one station at a time, and look what that station's watering and make sure everything in that station has similar watering needs.
Exactly. The other thing to do while you're doing that is you can buy a little batch of these little irrigation flags.
Oh, you're getting to one of my favorite things.
Yeah, at one of the big box, you know, home improvement centers or at your local nursery. And you take a handful of those and your coffee, and you walk through the garden, as Katrina said, on a nice morning, turning on your stations one at a time. And lo and behold, you'll find some sprinklers that are clogged and not working at all, which means a patch of your garden is going to die. Or you'll find one that maybe is a little broken and isn't shooting where it needs to shoot, and you just stick those flags in wherever you go. And if you're handy, you can then repair those yourself. Or if you're lazy like me, and I have a gardener who comes once a week, then I just let him know that he needs to fix any of those spots that have a little flag.
You know, Tina, I want to segue a little bit from what plants and planting together in groups to the watering, because it is so important what you just said. I love my garden. I love having plants in my garden. And I'm also very conscious of water. And when I found out that I became very diligent about drips and leaks, and it's amazing how much, if you don't have a leak in your garden, how many more plants you could really have for the same amount of water.
Never thought of that.
Oh, I have. Yeah. Allocating, like, okay, do I let this drip somewhere or do I take care of it and have a beautiful plant? And so what Tina's talking about is be wise, especially right now. You're going to be using more water than probably just about any other time of the year except for August. You know, it's long days and you're going to use lots of water. And I'm always kind of on the edge of my allocation, not to go into a danger zone, but I'm always inside of it. But I also have a lawn and I have fruit trees and I have grass and, you know, lots of plants and a vegetable garden. And I really, truly believe the only reason why I could have everything and look as good as it does is because I've been very mindful of my watering system.
Absolutely.
And so this is a good time because you're going to be turning your sprinklers on for more minutes, you know, per day. It's probably the longest time. Is go check your sprinkler system. You know, and those, what you turned me on to, those little flags, how nice is that? Because it's not only me remembering, it's if I have the gardener doing it, it's, well, which one was not working right?
Right.
And that tag is just a wonderful thing. They're super cheap. So go out, check your sprinkler systems, make sure they're not watering your sidewalks or your driveway. Make sure they're working. They're all popping up. And it really doesn't take that long. If you just go grab some of those at your box store and one early morning, like, I love the coffee idea, just go turn them on. A minute or two, just pop, pop, pop. And it really does wonders for your yard.
You can actually make it kind of a fun thing if you have kids or grandkids and, you know, it's going to be hot. You can even do it in the middle of the day. And if you have kids or grandkids, let them run through the sprinklers, right? How fun is that? Make a game out of it.
They're helping you.
Give them the flags. Oh, they'll love, you know, but only give them one at a time or they'll start planting them everywhere, right? But yeah, I mean, you can make it into a fun thing. The other thing that is a good idea to do when you're focused for however long that time is that you have to focus on irrigation is before you do it, go onto your local water district's website. Mine is IRWD, Irvine Ranch Water District. And I know on our water district's website, they actually have suggested times for you to water each of your different types of plant by month. And so in July, you know, they will tell you, well, for lawn, you know, you should water twice a week, and you should have two cycles of 5 minutes, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's the specifics. But they will tell you what it should be, and then you can then go out to your sprinkler system and set your sprinkler system so that that is the actual time that you are going to be watering. So then you don't just have to guess, right? You can actually be using a recommendation from the experts on how long you should be setting your sprinklers.
And then you could actually, if you really want to get into it a little more, get one of these probes. I have one that pushes into the ground, turns it, and it takes a core of the ground out. It's about the size of a quarter. And I can really see how far my water goes down.
And that's really important if we're talking fruit trees. And Katrina has a bunch of fruit trees. So if she's watering and she thinks she's watering enough, but then she takes a probe and she sees, oh my gosh, it's only the first 3 inches that are moist. Below that, the ground is dry as a bone. Well, that's going to end up killing a fruit tree. And I have personal experience of this from last summer.
Really, Tina? Do tell.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're a master gardener, you still kill plants, just so everybody knows. So I have citrus trees on my slope. And last summer, because of the drought, I was very, very careful with my watering. And I cut back the watering on the citrus trees. And turns out I cut it back too much because unbeknownst to me, because it's up on the slope, and they are in little planter areas with their dedicated bubblers, but because it's up on the slope, I don't go up there very often. And while I could see that the sprinklers were coming on and bubbling, what I didn't realize is that I had turned the time down too low, and I wasn't letting them bubble long enough to reach the roots. Mm. And so what happened by the end of the fall, beginning of the rainy season, as I was having a ton of dieback. And even with all the rain we had, I've lost two of my citrus trees. So pretty sad. So Katrina's advice about buying a soil probe and taking a core is a good one. Or at least if you don't have that, get a little trowel And, you know, dig a trowel will help you dig down 6 inches, and that can at least give you some indication of how deep your water is.
You know, I noticed the drought is quote-unquote over, but our water rates, my water rates went up a little bit this year.
Yeah, they did. So
it still can be very expensive if you go over your allotment.
Definitely, definitely. And just one more word about the fruit trees before we move on. The fruit trees need long periods of slow irrigation. So a 5-minute, you know, burst of the sprinkler on your fruit trees is not going to be sufficient. So what I have to do, because my fruit trees, other than the ones on the slope, are planted in my flower beds. And so the flower beds obviously need, you know, more frequent watering. So what I do in July and August is I actually take a hose with, you know, a little attachable sprinkler on it, and I actually water them for an hour or two so that that water can seep deep into the soil. And I do that at least once a month so that I'm sure that those guys are getting a deep watering. So just a word to the wise for your trees, water them deep.
It's getting, you learn from the expert, right?
Yeah, yeah. From the tree killer.
Oh my goodness. So should we talk a little bit more about water? You know, watering, I think we kind of got that covered. Check your timers. You know, make sure nothing's leaking. A really important check the time of day it comes on. You know, it's light earlier, so if you wanted to set them back a little bit, you could.
Yeah, you always want to water early so that the plants dry off and have the opportunity to dry off, you know, quickly first thing in the morning when the sun comes out. And the reason for that is wet leaves encourage fungal disease, and especially if you have roses or tomatoes, plants that are real susceptible to fungal disease, you want those leaves to dry off as soon as possible. And then, of course, we haven't talked about drip irrigation. We're mostly talking about overhead sprays. And drip irrigation is another whole topic. If you have drip irrigation, of course, you have to use, you know, your finger or a soil probe to determine whether or not that drip irrigation is on long enough to get to the roots of the plants that you're watering. So,
and if you have questions about any of this, we have a lot of information on our website.
We do.
So I know a lot of people are driving right now and can't write it down, but Google UC Master Gardeners, Orange County, California. Make sure you put down California, or you might end up in another state Master Gardeners site.
Like Florida.
Florida, yes. And make sure it's UC, so you got the UC information that's correct, UC Master Gardeners, and it's a fun place to go and explore. And if you have questions on this, we have something called a hotline. You could ask questions on the hotline. They love getting questions, and they're really, really good at answering them.
Yes, definitely. And when you go to that website, there will be a link to the hotline. So you can just click on that link, write your questions, and you'll get a personalized answer for your question. The last thing I want to talk about before we move away from water, from moisture, is mulch.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
And if you listen to the show regularly, you're probably sick of hearing us talk about mulch. But for any new listeners, or just as a reminder to our loyal listeners, gotta have mulch this time of year. Gotta have mulch all year, but especially this time of year. Check your mulch. If it's low, replace it. And you need about 3 inches to 4 inches of mulch around all of your plants, if at all possible. And the reason for that is it keeps your water in the ground, keeps it from evaporating. It also keeps your soil temperature moderated. So, I mean, I know it used to really surprise me when I was a new gardener and I planted lots of annuals, right? And they would get watered in the morning, but then by the afternoon they would be all wilted looking, and I couldn't figure out because they had gotten watered. Well, what happens is that soil temperature, you know, rises on a really hot day, and some plants then are just, they're transpiring, their moisture from their leaves is evaporating so quickly that they can't maintain those moisture-filled leaves because the soil is hot, the water's evaporating from the leaves, it's evaporating from the soil. So if you add that 3 inches of mulch around your plants, all of a sudden the soil stays evenly, the temperature stays even, the soil moisture stays even, and the plant says, ah, it's so much more relaxing to not have to fight this heat and evaporation constantly. So
it's really amazing.
It is.
If you have some wilting flowers in the afternoon, look about how much water you're putting on it and how much mulch you have on it, because that mulch will say that keeps me in my safe zone.
It sure does.
It really does, and it makes my plants happy. I even throw some straw around my vegetables so to keep the roots cool.
Oh yeah, it does. It just does wonders. I'm even mulching my pots now, which I never did until about 2 years ago. And now I put, you know, I have some citrus in pots, and I grow some tomatoes in pots. And I now put mulch on top of the pots because, of course, the pots dry out faster than anything, right?
I would think, if anything, you put mulch on the pots because...
But I never thought to do it, you know?
Yeah. So because it dries out so quickly anyways.
Yeah, exactly. And for the tomatoes, I like that red bark, you know, the bark that you can get that's kind of reddish colored. Mm-hmm. It lasts, you know, for a long time, keeps weeds from growing in your pots, keeps that soil cool and the moisture in. So, yeah, mulch.
And I tend to use straw in my vegetables.
Straw's great.
It's just easy and it's...
But see, you're by a feed store, so you can get straw. I don't have easy access to straw.
Come visit me.
I will. I'll steal half your bale of
straw. We'll share a bale of straw with some friends.
Yeah. I did that 1 year. I bought a bale and then I couldn't get rid of it. It took me like 2 years to use it all.
And I buy multiple bales at a time.
Yeah. So anyway.
I should bring straw down when
I
come.
Yeah, you should. When you come visit me, you should bring straw.
You know, master gardeners give funny gifts. You know, a lot of people get certain things. I'm going to be bringing Tina straw. And she's going to love it.
I will love it. And I have a very good friend that lives in Tustin and has chickens. And they bring me chicken poop as a hostess gift whenever they come for dinner. So, yeah, we're kind of odd.
Yes, instead of bringing wine, sometimes I'll bring chicken eggs and vegetables.
There you go. And you can always count on a jar of jam. That's always a nice
contribution. We set ourselves apart in many unusual ways.
Yeah, so anyway, let's talk about jam for a second, because since I brought it up. Because in July, if you have some fruit trees, you might be getting a ton of fruit.
Oh, and jams. You could do jam. I know you love doing jam. I also dehydrate them.
And my mom used to do that.
It's so easy to do.
Yeah.
I have some dehydrating right now.
That's awesome.
I have this little dehydrator, and I sit it on my deck, and I get a plethora of...
Dried fruit
and zucchini right now, and you know, it's like one day zucchini chips, another day it's some, you know, fruit leather or some chunks of fruit that I just want to dry out and save for later. And
yeah, great idea. Better to snack on that than potato chips or other bad things.
Let's talk about jam, and then I'll tell you about zucchini chips.
Okay, cool. Well, jam is super easy to make, and we encourage you to go listen to our podcast from our master food preservers, who will tell you the specifics of making jam. But suffice it to say that you want to use your ripe fruit. So especially right now, my peaches are coming in, so way faster than I can eat them or pawn them off on the neighbors. So what I do is I pit and peel the peaches, and I put them in Ziploc bags, and I chuck them in the freezer. Mm-hmm. And then when I have time, when it's not a hot day, like maybe in October or right before Christmas, that fruit will be good in the freezer for several months. And I take them out then. And because it's going to be jam, it doesn't matter if they're, you know, a little, when you defrost fruit, it gets a little soft. But for jam, that doesn't matter. And I just process them and jam. If you can stir, you can make jam, because all it is fruit, pectin, and some sugar. And that's jam. So,
and you can go to, this is another, we're also part of the UC system, is UC Master Food Preservers. So if you want to learn how to make jam, or if you want to know about dehydrating fruits and vegetables, you can go to, just Google UC Master Garden or Master Food Preservers, Google UC Master Food Preservers in Orange County, California, and they have lots of recipes, they have lots of how-tos. And bounties from your garden, that's what they specialize in. They have classes on how to do it.
They do. They have public classes. And they're wonderful classes, and you go home with what you make. This is hands-on.
Hands-on to how to do it.
Yeah.
But right now, a lot of people are getting a lot of zucchini out of their garden.
Yeah, so how do you make zucchini chips? I've never made them.
I either slice it real thin, or I use a mandolin, and And so you could do different things. I tend to like a little bit of like apple cider vinegar and just a tad in there. I like that. And some sea salt. And then I just stick it, lay them flat in a dehydrator. You could probably do it in your oven too. And just until they're nice and crispy.
Wow.
And it's good. You know, it intensifies, whatever you dehydrate kind of intensifies the flavor because it takes the water out, so you have all the taste still left in it. So instead of having potato chips that are processed or whatever, I have these bags of zucchini chips. And they're yummy. And, you know, there's different recipes that you could find to do it. Whatever you like, you could put different things on them. And it's just it's easy. And it's kind of like people are going, what do you have here? Ooh, and it's homemade. And we all have lots of zucchini right now, anybody who grows zucchini. So it's another, you get creative when you have zucchini.
Yeah, now I have pickled mine before, which I do love zucchini pickles as well as cucumber pickles. But that's another option.
And you could ferment these things, too. There's a lot of stuff from your garden you could ferment.
Oh.
So then you have the probiotic issue, probiotics that will help your gut,
Which
is wonderful. And you can learn about that at UC Master Food Preservers. So
cool.
Orange County, California, they have classes on fermentation. So
yeah.
We can get going on that.
So when you get tired of listening to us, there's another thing you can go learn. So.
Bounty from your garden. There's lots to do with it.
Yeah, so let's talk about the bounty from our garden, because July is a month where you are probably going to be awash in your summer crops that you planted back in March, April, or May.
What do you have growing right now, Tina?
So I have ready to harvest right now. I have tomatoes, and I still have kale, and I still have onions, and then I just planted, because some of my winter vegetables, you know, were hanging on there till it got real hot. So I just planted in June some new carrots from seed, my starts of the zucchini, my starts of cucumbers. So I'm just now starting to see the baby zucchini and the baby cucumbers because I got mine in a little bit late.
And I got mine in a little bit early, and I am just pulling zucchini and cucumbers like crazy out of the yard.
That's awesome.
It's really a lot of fun. And
yeah.
Right now my green beans are going off.
Oh, that's the other thing I just planted from seed. In June, so they're just a few weeks old. But I should probably have beans in another week or two because they happen really fast.
They happen really fast.
Yeah.
I got short beans, you know, regular beans and long beans, and those are fun. And still have some artichokes coming in. I let some artichokes go to flower, and they go make beautiful. They attract
arrangements,
bees,
oh,
and they're
yeah.
beautiful in arrangements.
Yeah,
because I had so many artichokes, we just couldn't eat them all.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Well, why don't we take a couple minutes, since we're talking about all of this stuff to harvest, and talk about individual veggies. I have some notes here, trying to find them, about how to and when to harvest each of your veggies, because we want to make sure that we're getting them at the peak of their flavor. And so the first rule of thumb is harvest in the morning. That's when it's going to be.
Tell us why.
That's going to be when, A, it's most pleasant for you as a gardener because it's going to be cool. But the other reason is that your fruit and veggies will have a high water content at that point in time, which usually means that they're going to be juicy, right? You want a juicy peach. You want a juicy tomato. You want juicy cucumbers. And if you wait until the heat of the day or the late afternoon, of course, you know, that water content isn't going to be as high. The other reason is that when the fruit is cool, it's going to last longer. If you pick that fruit or vegetable, you know, when it's super hot, chances of it wanting to wilt or start to decay more quickly is higher if you pick it when it's, kind of 80 degree hot or 90 degree hot.
We did that last week. We picked some actual vegetables for flower arrangement, and we had picked some kale. And I had kale in the morning. I stuck it in a flower arrangement. And I picked kale in the late afternoon and stuck it in a flower arrangement. Same amount of water. And the kale in the morning lasts for days and days and days. And the kale in the afternoon wilted.
Yep.
And it was just amazing to me. I garden quite a bit. And it was just amazing. I've never done it side by side before to really show the difference.
Yeah.
So pick your stuff in the morning.
Yeah,
get up a little early. If you have to go to work, just go ahead and pick it in the morning. You'll have it when you get home at work.
Absolutely,
work at night.
Yeah. So let's talk about a few veggies one at a time so that we can give you some tips on when to harvest them, especially if you are growing something kind of for the first time. You know, you may not be clued in as to when the best time is to pick it. So let's talk about beets. If you planted beets, I often do that in the fall and winter, so I've already harvested all of my beets. But if you planted beets and you still have them going, which you can keep your root veggies going pretty much all year. You want to pick the beets between when they are tiny, when you can just, you know, use them as the gourmet baby veggies, right?
Oh, I like the way you say that.
Yes, because you pay so much money for those at a restaurant or in the, you know, farmer's market. And then when they're golf ball size, that's probably as big as you want them to get because they get kind of woody after
Very
that.
Woody.
Yeah. So pick them by the time they're golf ball size. Cantaloupe. You growing any cantaloupe this year?
I'm not growing it this year. Are you growing cantaloupe this year?
I'm not because it takes too much space and I only have my three raised beds. But if you are growing cantaloupe, you want to pick it at what's called the full slip size. And that means when there's a crack that forms around the stem next to the fruit and the fruit falls off in your hand without any twisting. So you want to pick it, that's when it's super, super ripe. Now, you can pick it a little bit earlier than that if you want, which is probably when it gets picked commercially, because, of course, they have to pick it when it's firm and able to ship.
It takes time to ship.
Yeah. But at your home, you know, you want to pick it at that super pick or super ripe peak of
that
flavor.
Sweet.
Yeah. Mm. Super ripe. Carrots. Now, I just planted new carrots because I like to have fresh carrots all year round. And the carrots, of course, you can start harvesting when they're just the size of your baby finger, right? Mm-hmm. Again, that gourmet baby fruit and or veggie. And then you can also let them get to be, you know, an inch or so in diameter. But again, don't let them get too big because also when it's hot, the carrots do flower. And if you see your carrots starting to send up a flower stalk, pick them right away, and even then, they're going to be a little bit woody. So try and pick them when they have that nice, fluffy, green top, not when they get that flower stalk coming out. And then corn. Do you plant corn? I don't have room for corn.
We plant. That's one reason why I don't have cantaloupe. We planted corn this year, so this
cool.
is going to be interesting. We haven't had corn in a long time. Tell us about corn.
So you want to pick the corn, and I know this from working at Centennial Farm as a docent. You want to pick the corn when the tips of the silks go crispy brown and the ears are filled out and you can kind of, you know, feel them mm-hmm. and feel how meaty they are. You can also take one and peel down, you know, one side of it to see if those corn kernels are nice and full. So that's when you want that. Cucumbers. You can harvest cucumbers at any size, but you want to do it before they've been on the vine for too long. Otherwise, most of the fruit will end up being full of seeds.
Yes.
And so you want to pick it air more towards the young side than too big. And I am going to give folks a space-saving tip for cucumbers because they do take, they're a member of the squash family, so they take up a lot of room potentially. Mm-hmm. Grow them on a trellis.
Absolutely.
That's the first thing. And the second thing is I only grow pickling cucumbers. And the reason is that you get more fruit, you know, per mm-hmm. plant. And if you just let the pickling cucumber get a little bit bigger than you would for pickles, it's a perfectly good table cucumber. And it's short. And because it's just my husband and I, mm-hmm. then we can eat the whole thing rather than, you know how you use half of a full-size cucumber
yes.
and then it gets mushy and nasty mm-hmm. in your refrigerator? I like the pickling cucumbers because, you know, one of those in a salad is perfect.
That's perfect. Yeah, we get the regular cucumbers. I wanted to do the pickling cucumbers, but something ate it in my garden when we planted it.
Bad.
So I know, bad. But you know, even the larger cucumbers, you know, we'll eat half of it in a salad, and the next day we'll chop the rest up and have it for snacks the next day.
Yeah, that's a great
baggy.
Idea. Yeah, yeah. Eggplant.
Before we go to eggplant.
Oh, you want me to do a station ID?
Yeah.
Okay. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents.
Okay.
Okay, moving on to eggplant, which I don't grow. Do you grow?
I grow the long, the Chinese eggplant.
Nice.
Or Japanese eggplant.
Yeah.
I like those because I like to grill them.
Oh, I bet that is good.
They're really tasty. So those are my favorite.
My husband doesn't like eggplants, so I don't grow it. But the fruit should be glossy and filled out, and the flesh should not spring back when you press it with your thumb. Is that how you do it, or do you have another trick?
Let's look at it.
She's been gardening a long time. She can look at
pressing.
It.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Okay, green beans. Okay, this is another one that you want to pick early. You don't want them to get too big because then you've got that
stringy,
hard. The seeds inside are not tender anymore. Uh-huh. So pick your green beans.
I could tell we both did that.
And young. Yes.
And I heard, Tina, if you pick them more often, you get more.
Yes. Like most flowers,
yes.
If you deadhead and pick them, you get more.
Right. And pick them, yeah. And those are another fun thing, just homegrown string beans, like any other vegetable. Oh, my gosh, we're eating those we just have them on the counter right now because we're getting so many. And it's been our snack, you know. We just grab a green bean and we're not cooking it or anything because it tastes so good.
Yeah, and I hated beans growing up. Even when my mom would buy them fresh from the supermarket, I still did not like them. Because when you pick them fresh and young from your own garden, they just have a different flavor.
They're sweet.
Yeah.
And they're tender.
Yeah. So anyway, grow green beans. They're super easy. And they're super fun for kids because they grow so fast and they set so many beans that the kids just get a huge kick out of going out there and picking them. Peppers. You want to pick those as soon as the peppers are well-formed and still crisp. Don't leave them hang too long on the plant because then they'll start to get a little mushy. But you don't want to harvest them too early because then they're pretty, in the case of the bell peppers, they're pretty sour and tart. So you get the hang of it. You know, pick one, test it. If it's too sour and tart, then you know you should let them, you know, the next one stay on the plant for a little bit longer. Okay. Summer squash, in other words, zucchini. Oh, gosh. Pick while the skin is thin, while the fruit is small, maybe, an inch to an inch mm-hmm. and a half in diameter. And you got to look at them every day because you'll have a baseball bat out there in 4 days' time if you aren't keeping an eye on them.
She's not kidding.
It's pretty crazy. Tomatoes. Well,
everybody
of course,
loves tomatoes.
I think we all know how to pick a ripe tomato. If you're growing the red tomatoes or the orange tomatoes or the yellow tomatoes, you generally want that color to be super vibrant. That's when they're the ripest. And don't pick it too early because the only way to get that homegrown tomato flavor is to make sure you leave it on the vine till it's ripe. And that's the benefit of growing them yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it's a taste. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness. They're just so, so good. Watermelon.
Oh, you also have to grow basil if you're going to grow your tomato.
Oh, absolutely grow basil.
Grow basil with your tomato. Pick a tomato. Pick some basil leaves.
Yeah. You want to have fresh bruschetta all the time.
All the time.
Every day. Or my other favorite is caprese.
Mine too.
The tomato and that mozzarella cheese with a little basil, chopped basil, and some fresh, you know, really good quality olive oil and balsamic vinegar.
Ugh. Maybe a little Parma on the top of it and prosciutto or prosciutto. And that's what I'm having for dinner tonight.
You know, it's so funny when my daughter comes to visit and I make a plate of that. She won't let anyone else have any. I now make two plates of it, you know, because you're going to serve it as an appetizer or a side dish. And now I know I have to make two plates of it because she'll eat the whole one plate just for dinner. She doesn't want anything else but the homegrown tomatoes.
I'm having it for dinner tonight with the avocado on top. And
nice.
A little bit of prosciutto and basil. And
there you go. That's all the food groups, right?
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
I'm happy. That's my dinner.
And then watermelon, if anybody has room for watermelon, I don't. Do you grow watermelon? No melons. Yeah, no melons for us. But on the watermelon, you want to harvest it when the skin under the melon turns from pure white to cream color. So there's a clue if you're picking them out in the market. Look for the ones where that white spot isn't white anymore, but cream. That means you're going to have a nice, ripe watermelon. Thumping doesn't really tell you anything, just so you know. The other thing, the other tip too is there's a little tendril that happens by the stem, this little tendril thing that comes up like a curlicue, and when that starts to turn brown, your melon's ripe. So anyway, those are our tips on how to harvest, which veggies and fruits, and you want to bring them inside right away. Don't let them sit out in the sun. And for most of your fruits and veggies, you can leave them sitting on the counter if you're going to use them that day. But if you are not going to use them that day, you can wash the beans, let them drain, dry, store them in the fridge. But we don't advise washing the tomatoes and storing those in the fridge because you lose a lot of flavor when you do that. So just pick as many of those tomatoes as you're going to use in a day or two.
Tina, are you going to plant anything this month? Any vegetables?
Good question. Not much, but I will plant a couple more tomato plants.
Same here.
Why do you plant a couple more tomato plants?
I plant them because when the other ones start fading out, I have other ones that are starting to produce.
Exactly.
So I can kind of extend my summer as long as I can. How about you?
The same thing. I'm a tomato addict. I just admit it. I'm a tomato addict, and I want to have those homegrown tomatoes for as long as I can. And if I plant new ones in July, then I often have tomatoes till Christmas.
Wow. You get, Tina gets a little bit more sun than I do, so she's able to pull hers off a little bit longer, but I'm still able to get a little bit more if I plant. Now, is there a particular type of tomato that you plant this month?
I do like to plant... there are two things. I like to plant champion. I think champion, I have good success with that in July. And then I also plant some more of the cherries because the cherries don't seem to care much about, you know, when they're planted. They have a pretty long production cycle. They're usually super flavorful. And I don't know, they just seem to be a little more wild. So I do like the small fruited tomatoes for planting in July because they do seem to hang on
a little bit longer. Have you ever planted early girl this time?
I don't usually plant early girl this time of year. Do you plant it this time of year?
I'm trying one this year to see because it has a shorter period of time that it takes to get ripe.
Yeah, that's
true. So I thought I have room. I might as well do it and kind of experiment because I want to do a champion and, of course, you know, a... what's my yellow little cherry tomato that I yellow little cherry tomato? I can't think of the name right now, but I'll plant another one of those.
Yeah,
we'll just kind of experiment and see what happens.
Great, great. Yes, Celebrity's the other one that I do. So Champion and Celebrity are usually the two plus a cherry. So I usually plant like 3 to 4 plants of those in July, and I don't ever plant the beefsteaks. You know, they take a long time to ripen because it's a really big fruit. So I wouldn't advise planting the really big fruited ones. The Celebrity, the Champion, the Early Girl are, you know, small to medium-sized fruits. And so hopefully you'll have enough warmth to get those, you know, to be ripe as the weather turns from hot to cool. But if you plant them in July, especially in the first part of the month, we still have all of July, all of August, and all of September that are going to be hot. So you're pretty sure that you're going to be getting, you know, tomatoes off of those plants because it doesn't start getting cold around here till the end of November, really.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes
shorter
not even
days,
that, shorter days, but it doesn't start getting cold. And the key to tomatoes is the air temperature. One of the keys is the air temperature at night because, you know, they don't set fruit once the nighttime temperatures start getting below 55 degrees, unless you have the varieties that are bred, you know, to set fruit at cooler temperatures.
So, Arctic. And
yeah, and those, yeah. So anyway, but that's pretty much all I plant, except if my beans are fading, then I may try and do a, you know, a new crop of beans. If I plant, especially you planted yours early, so.
We're planting beans this week. Another new crop of beans.
Yeah, so. It's not that you can't plant them. It's just my garden is usually full up in July, so there's no place for me to plant new veggies. But I'll always plant some new basil if for some reason, you know, the snails got my basil. I will always, you know, try to keep the basil going.
I keep basil going, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it goes to flower really easy in the warm weather, and it's easy to plant.
Yeah. Don't try to plant cilantro in the summer.
No.
Because it will flower right away, and... So I avoid. I know I've never figured out why cilantro goes in salsa. Because the tomatoes come in the summer, but my cilantro always bolts. So I just buy the cilantro at the market. Haven't figured that one out.
Good point. Something to think about, huh?
Yeah. Don't know how that happened exactly. So I think that's good on veggie gardens. Do you have anything else you want to add on veggie gardens?
Enjoy.
Yeah.
Keep tying stuff up.
Yeah.
Keep getting rid of your yellow leaves
in
your vegetable garden.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. That keeps your tomatoes way healthier as if you pull off the yellowing leaves.
I think it keeps everything healthier, and it cleans up the garden, and bugs don't seem
absolutely
to be quite as coming to you quite as much. And
yeah.
Just tidying up, and it looks pretty.
Yeah.
When people come over, they go, ooh.
Yeah.
It's kind of like mulching.
Right.
Mulching.
Oh, and share. You're
share.
Probably going to have more than you can eat, so share.
Yeah.
Except that if you keep bringing people zucchini, they'll start closing their curtains when they see you walking down the street.
They roll up their windows in their car and leave.
Right. Okay, should we talk about our decorative part of the garden?
Oh, let's do that.
Let's do, because July is the month to have barbecues, right? Gosh.
Oh, yeah.
What a great month to use your outdoor spaces.
Absolutely.
And you got all these great veggies that you can barbecue. Or
grill your vegetables.
Mm. Yeah. So let's talk about... You're gonna have a barbecue, but you've been on vacation, so your yard maybe hasn't been getting as much TLC as it needed. So, oh dear, what do we do to spruce up the yard real quick? Well, here's a couple of super, super quick hints. First of all, make sure that your pots at your entryway look pretty, right? So
right.
just make that look pretty. And if your things that you had in there prior to leaving on vacation are now dead and dying, just rip the whole thing out. These big box retailers have these pre-planted, called drop and grow, you know, containers that have, you know, blooming stuff in. I'm cheating and totally doing those now in the summertime. When, you know, my garden looked great in the spring and I planted them all myself and, you know, from scratch, and they looked great. And then I go on a couple of trips and come home and they look horrible, right? So that's what I'm doing now. I'm pulling that stuff out. And then I'm just buying one of these drop and grow, you know, flowering summer plants and just putting it in.
Yes, even master gardeners do this.
Yes, we totally
learn
cheat.
From the best.
Yes, totally cheat. It's totally okay. If you're having a big barbecue, cheat. The other thing that you can do is, if you don't want to waste the money and you want something that's going to last longer, is plant succulents in your pots at your front door.
I have we both have succulents.
We both
in
do now. Yeah.
We both do.
And the ones I have in my garden right now, I think I planted 2 years ago. I mean, in my pots at the front door, I think I planted 2 years ago. So, yeah, if you don't want to waste the money, I don't think it's a waste. It's kind of like buying a centerpiece, but it's a centerpiece that'll last you for probably 3 months. If you want to buy one of those flowering drop-and-grow things, it's great, and it'll last you for 2 to 3 months. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want to replant it again in 2 to 3 months, plant succulents. You can make a beautiful succulent arrangement. In
gorgeous.
Your entryway pot, and it'll last you for a couple years, probably.
And you know what else is nice is that my entryway is really hot, and I cook things out there.
Not on purpose.
Not on purpose. I do not try to cook them on purpose, but if I go on a trip or go out of town, and I just, you can't have the house sitters or people come by or whatever. I don't count on that. But succulents, I water them before I go. They're forgiving, and they don't need that much water.
No.
So I douse them really good before I go, and it's something I don't have to worry about. And I was to the point of almost giving up. About
having something out front? Yeah
because it just really, it hits, it gets morning, afternoon. I mean, you get sun all day long on my front door, and it cooks things in pots, you know? And the succulents they've been kind and generous. And, you know, I water them when I use my water from my sink, and I go dumping in there every so often, and I'm done. And they grow well, and they don't need a lot of trimming, and it's easy and it's pretty, and I get a lot of compliments.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever plant anything other than succulents out there, because we like to take, you know, too many trips during the summer. So especially in the summertime, the succulents are fabulous for the entryway pots. But other tips for your parties is to tidy up your rest of your yard. If you, like Katrina and I, have roses and other perennials, just tell yourself the week before your barbecue that you're going to give yourself an hour or two to go out and deadhead.
Mm-hmm.
If you just take off the spent flowers, it gives your yard a whole fresh look. You don't have to plant anything. You don't have to, you know, spend a lot of time. Just go out there and deadhead, and pull any tall weeds, right? The little ones, don't worry about. But if there's any tall weeds, dandelions that are 3 feet tall, you might want to pull those. Yeah.
And a bag of mulch, maybe, if you haven't mulched.
That's what I was just going to say. So you may not have time to do the big mulch of your whole bed, but you know what I do? This, again, is total master gardener cheat, right? Is I go get a bag of mulch from the big box retailer or the garden, local garden center, and I just put that in my, I have a little wagon that I tote around, and I just take a shovel with me and I walk along the edges of my flower beds and I just shovel little bits of mulch all along the edge of the flower bed. And if there's any, you know, open space, you know, mm-hmm. next to a rose bush or something, just shovel that in just real quick. And it takes like 10 minutes for, you know, I have two big flower beds that border mm-hmm. the lawn. I'm showing Katrina with my hands. It's too bad no one else can see this. But I just shovel that mulch along the edge of that flower bed so that if people walk along the edge of the, you know, lawn looking at the flower bed, it looks super nice and fresh.
It does. That's a great idea.
That is so good, Tina. I learned so much from you.
It's just so totally cheating, but it is a way to make your...
That is such a great idea because I get mulch like once a year.
Yeah.
But by right now, it's kind of looking. It's if I really want to dress
just
it up.
Just do the edges.
Just do the edges.
Do the edges of your flower beds and or perennial beds or whatever you got or, you know, your veggie beds, whatever it is. Just do the edges with mulch and... It'll look like you spend, you know, hours every day in your garden.
I learn something every time from you, Tina. I love it. Okay, so quick things. What else do you do?
And then the last thing I would suggest for parties is I like to buy whatever is super bloomy at the nursery center, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's chrysanthemums or marigolds or whatever, and rather than doing centerpieces, I just buy, you know, the 4-inch round pots of whatever is in bloom, and I put them, I keep some empty pots, you know, how you get orchids from, you know, the market or from the nursery or whatever, mm-hmm. and they come in these nice ceramic pots. Mm-hmm. I just save those. My husband loves it. I just save those in a cabinet, and so when I have parties, I bring those out, and I know that I have, you know, 6 to 10 of these 6-inch wide pots. Mm-hmm. So I just buy 6 to 10 of these blooming plants, no matter what it is, geranium, marigold, whatever, and I pop those in these pots, and then you take them around and you just put them on, you know, your patio table, if you have a little counter out there, mm-hmm. a little side table next to your, you know, chairs that you have on your patio. And so you just now have this, I like to do a color scheme, you know, so for 4th of July, I would, you know, maybe choose all red mm-hmm. gerberas or something. And then you can stick if it's a 4th, well, we're past 4th of July, but, you know, if you were doing some sort of a themed party, you can stick a little flag or a little, you know, if it's a baby shower, some sort of, you know, baby
or birthday
decoration, a birthday.
A lot of birthday celebrations in the summertime.
Right.
Happy birthday, little things in
little
there.
Things, and just stick those in. And now in a super short amount of time, you have decorated your outdoor area. And then what I do with them, because they're super hard to keep alive, right? They dry out like crazy in the heat. There's inevitably bare spots in my garden. And so then I just go out there, take a trowel, dig a little hole, pop that 6-inch plant in the flower bed where there's an empty place, and now I've killed two birds with one stone. I've decorated for my party, and after the party, I've filled in empty holes in my garden.
I do the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Some of these things are coming back year after year.
Yeah.
My color scheme might not go with my yard, but it just keeps coming back.
She has a huge yard, so it doesn't matter.
I'm not quite color-coded as Tina, but... It's so true, though. It's some things that you don't think that will grow will just grow in those little pots that you come in back. It's great. Hey, Tina, we have like 10 minutes left.
Okay, 10 minutes left. Let's see. Let's talk a little bit about pests,
I think.
Because July can be kind of a bad time for pests. And one of my unfavorite, most least liked pests is the tomato hornworm. And so... that can defoliate. You go away for a weekend and you come back, if you had tomato hornworms, it can defoliate your entire tomato plant in just a couple of days. They are nasty, nasty critters. So one of the things that I like to do also early in the morning, and again, if you have kids or grandkids, it's you can make a game out of it. They are these green nasty worms, and they're hard to spot. But kids are really good at it because they're down low, and they can look up under the leaves of the tomato plant. And so, you know, give them a quarter for every one of those tomato hornworms they find. And if you really want to be kind of gruesome, but my kids always thought it was fun, is give them safety scissors. And when they find them and they pick them off the plant, let them cut them in half. How nasty is that?
Sweet Katrina, sweet Tina.
Yeah, pretty mean, but, you know.
Oh, she smiled when she said that.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, the other thing that you can do.
She really smiles when they've eaten half her plant.
Yeah, not a happy camper then. The other thing that you can do is you can spray the tomato plants with BT, B as in boy, T as in Tom, and that is an organic spray that you can get at any good nursery, and it is toxic to all caterpillars, though, so you don't want to go around spraying it throughout your whole yard. You only want to spray it on your tomato plants, because otherwise you'll kill the caterpillars of the butterflies that we want to have in our garden. So use BT on it, or hand pick them. Those are kind of your two choices.
We've hand picked.
Yeah. I actually will spray the BT, especially if I'm going to be in and out, because the little ones are really hard to spot.
Mm.
And so if I know I'm going to be, you know, gone for a weekend or something, I'll hand pick the big ones, but then I'll spray just to make sure I got all the little ones.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So anyway. But speaking of using BT, I have one more pest I want to talk about because I don't think we have that much time. But I don't know if anybody else is having this problem, but for the last few years, there has been a pest for bougainvillea. And bougainvillea is a landscape plant that so many of us have in our yards that I want to just mention this real quickly. This happened probably about 10 years ago. We got this new pest, which we're always getting new pests because we live in California. And we're a port, and so these pests are always hitching a ride on ships. And we got this new pest of this one-inch-long caterpillar that's called the bougainvillea looper. And let's see, I could maybe try to say the Latin name. Disclisio procta stellata is its scientific name. And it decimates the foliage of bougainvillea. And it's so sad because it's such a great plant, but it makes this plant look just terrible. So what happens is it's the larva of a moth called the somber carpet moth, and it lays its eggs on the bougainvillea, and then when the weather gets warm, it starts eating the leaves. And it doesn't defoliate the plant completely, but it makes it look totally raggedy. It's like you're wearing the most raggedy t-shirt you've ever had because it just has holes throughout all of the leaves, and it is just not attractive. So it isn't as bad the last year as it has been in the past, but I was just noticing in my yard that it's starting to attack again. So again, you can hand pick, but these are really small, so it's kind of hard to see, and a lot of us have bougainvillea growing up on trellises, so pretty tough to hand pick there. So it is possible to control it using the BT again, which is why I wanted to mention it when we were talking about the tomato hornworm. So you can spray with BT, and that should control it. The other thing that controls it is spinosad, depends. Some people say it's spinosad, some people say it's spinosad, which is also an organic pesticide. But it does kill bees, so if you are going to spray it, you know, try and do it at a time of day where you're not seeing any bee activity. So those are the two ways to control that.
Wow, I haven't seen those yet, and I have quite a few bougainvillea.
Well,
so
come over.
I'll
take you to my yard
glad
and show you.
So if I see them, I will now know what it is.
Yeah. So anyway, do we have any time for anything else?
We have a couple minutes left.
Okay. Maybe we'll just throw out about lawns real quick, because
yes,
you and I have managed to keep a little bit of our lawns. We do let them try and dry out. We water them as minimally as possible. When we see, you know, we try a certain amount of time, and when we see brown spots starting to show up, then we crank the water up just a little bit more. But I know you and I are both living with a few brown spots in our lawns just so we can keep them. The other thing that you can do for your lawn to help it with water is adjust the height of your mower. So you want the height of your mower to be higher. You don't want to cut off as much lawn. You probably want it to leave like 3 inches of blade, which might seem like kind of a lot, but it will shade the ground and help preserve the water. The other thing that you can do, which actually is probably better done in late spring, is to aerate your lawn. But if you haven't done it, you can still do it right now. And those little sandals that have the spikes in can work if you have a really small lawn, but they don't go very deep. So what I prefer, if you're not renting, if you have a big lawn, you can rent one of those professional aerating tools. But if you have a small to medium-sized lawn, I actually have an aerator that looks like, gosh, what does it look like? How would you describe it, Katrina? It has these two prongs on the end of a handle. It's like a pitchfork, but it has these two hollow prongs. And so when you step on it and push it into the ground, it fills up with a core of soil in those two hollow prongs, and it comes out the top. When you go to do the next one and you step on it again, the new soil pushes the old soil out. So you end up with these little cores of soil on the top of your lawn. But after you water the lawn a couple of times, they just disintegrate. But what that does is it allows the water to get deeper into the lawn, and therefore you don't have the surface, you know, the water just laying on the surface and not getting down to the roots.
Now, so, what do you think about leaving your lawn clippings on your lawn?
If you have what's called a mulching mower, that's a great idea, because what the mulching mower does is it spins and chops up the grass into, you know, little tiny bits and pieces, and that just goes back on the lawn, and it decomposes so quickly that it's fine. But if you don't have that type of lawn, then it's not a good idea, because the lawn clippings can be so heavy that they weigh down, you know, your lawn and, you know, cause problems with, you know, water and sunlight getting to the lawn. So it's better to do it if you have a mulching mower, and, you know, maybe or maybe not a good idea if you don't have a mulching mower.
Got it. Well, Tina, I think we're just about there. Any last words of wisdom? Have fun.
Have
fun. Enjoy your yard this year. Get out early. If you're going to garden, it's hot, get out early. And have some parties and have some friends over and show off your yard and relax in it and enjoy your bounty and harvest your vegetables and your fruits and share them with friends and look up UC Master Food Preservers. And
July and August are not the months to work in your garden a lot. These are the months to enjoy your garden a lot.
Yeah, enjoy. Alrighty, well, I think we're there, and we want to thank everybody for listening to us this week. And until next week, we hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week and enjoy your garden. And we'll see you. We'll talk to you next week.